You just think we just, you know, whatever happens, we just shit another player. All right, and everything's going to be perfect. All of our fans think that. You all think that. That's what you write about.
You don't want to be here. There's a specific reason. Not really. You know, I think we did a poor job recruiting. If guys are coming in and immediately walking out the door because it was something different than what they thought it would be. We lied to them during recruiting, or we sold them on a dream that wasn't true.
As we want to be a big, fast, dominating, aggressive, relentless football team that nobody in the SEC wants to play.
Now, that's also a second in the West, baby.
Yes, sir.
Time we're ever getting excited about second. From now on, it's first, okay?
Winning the SEC probably is harder than winning the national championship. Do you know that?
Well, how about them fucking dogs?
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the Pirate, and the Pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.
Welcome in the latest episode of that SEC podcast presented by my bookie. I'm your host, Michael Breton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm joined as always by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Hey, doing good, Shane. We're getting a day closer here to some week two action. We got all kinds of games to discuss.
Yeah.
But before we get into the action, I got to know, what'd you just crack open there, buddy?
Oh, this one, hell, I don't know, Mike. You know, I'm going to tell you right now, I've tried, and my palate just, I guess it's just not sophisticated enough. So I got about six more of these crazy looking cans to get through. I don't want to waste them, you know, but this is called Appalachia. It's an IPA from Wicked Weed Brewing, really cool looking can, and you know, not too bad. First taste isn't that bad, so maybe it just ain't trying hard enough, Mike. You know, I got to stop getting the artwork and start focusing on what's inside the can. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Pro tip, that's one thing, man. I should have mentioned that, but it seems like the fancier and flashier the can is, yeah, usually the beer is worse. So don't get tricked by the artwork. That's no disrespect to the beer companies out there, but they got to get you to drink it somehow.
That's,
you
know? That's right.
Hey, well, we're going to get to some Will Muschamp here in a minute, preview the South Carolina-Florida game. But before we get to that, you know, he spoke here on Tuesday, and this was the highlight of the day. We always like to have the funniest clips up front if we can. Mm-hmm. And for anybody that missed it, I mean, I don't know how you did. We'll play the video here, but viral video from Coach Muschamp leaked. Apparently, this is about 2 years old, and this leaked right before, or it was on Saturday before the Tennessee game, and so we're going to play the video, and then here's Will Muschamp getting asked about the video, and he was none too happy about this one.
It's time for Carolina football, so get the fuck out of your seats. Spurs up.
That brief video clip that made the rounds this past weekend.
Why would I know you'd ask that, huh? It was an outtake between me and Justin King, okay? And if I offended anybody, I apologize, all right? But it was between me and another guy. And why in the world would I know you would ask this question?
Well, they said you were going to address it after the game, but I figured you weren't in the right mood for that. But
still not in the right mood, but I appreciate you bringing it up. Yeah. And again, I apologize if I offend anybody. It's between two people. It was never meant to be public. It was between two people. And somebody obviously thought they were going to be cute and put it out there so Phil Kornbluth could ask a question. Tiger Phil strikes again.
No. My question was, do you know who put it, how it got out?
No, but I'm looking forward to finding out.
Yeah. No, and my other question was,
did you put it out, Phil? Did you get a hold of it?
No, sir. It was not me. But my question was, if it's somebody inside your organization who did that, how would you feel about that person?
I probably couldn't say it in this press conference. I don't want to use that language again, Phil. I mean, seriously, though, why did we all know he was going to ask that? You just can't help yourself. Go ahead.
Well, I just want you to know that I did not release that video. Just want to be clear about that.
Yeah,
also, in addition to having to wear a mask,
I mean, my mom had to call me before the game and get on me about it. So You know, I'm 49 years old, I think. Yeah, I am 49. Go ahead.
If mama's not happy, you know you've done it.
That's right.
All right, Shane. So, you know, he mentions there just briefly Justin King. For anybody that doesn't know, I mean, South Carolina fans, I assume, know who that is. But he was a former media member. Now he works for the South Carolina Gamecocks. He's the one that does all their video work with their outstanding, you know, hype videos and uniform videos and all this stuff. So he's a very, very talented guy. But that's who he's talking about. You know, that was just, I guess, an inside joke, what have you, and it got out. And man,
it always gets out. Mike, you know, now Mama Champ ain't happy.
And this is just one of those things, Shane. Had, you know, if South Carolina would have came out and whipped Tennessee's ass, I bet you the entire Gamecock Nation would have been saying, hell yeah, that's our guy. Yeah. But now that they blew it, now that they kicked a field goal down 7 with 3 minutes left in the game, we got to get this foul-mouthed son of a bitch out of here.
You know, it's so funny, man, because the other day my mom, she's like, hey, she goes, I'm actually listening to your podcast today. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like which one? That's what I think. Did I say any bad words? You know, so, man, that's the thing, brother. It always gets out. You got to be careful, man. Today, I mean, it's not just coach, you know, talking here, but when that video was done, unless you saw it deleted, you know, there's going to be some intern that's going to find that, and it's going to be Twitter gold. And that's exactly what this clip was.
Well, all right, buddy. Hey, we got a lot to cover. We didn't get to do all these yesterday just because we were waiting for all the coaches to speak. But you ready to go around the league, preview some Week 2 SEC games?
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league.
My daughters said something about me wearing a visor and need to put on a hat because I'm getting bald. So I'm going to wear a hat from here on out.
I mean, if you look over the next 6 years, I think we played Miami 3 times, Florida State 6 times, South Florida 3 times, Mississippi State 1 time. So who's the SEC teams? You know, I mean, I think it's an injustice for the kids. We should mix those games up, and you should, you know, play more teams from the West.
Why don't you start calling around and see if you can get somebody else to play us, and we'll play them. We'll play anybody you can get to play us.
At Louisiana, hold on a second.
Hey, guys! Hey, I'm having a press conference, okay? Thank you.
All right, we're going to start in Athens. That's the big game of the week. Georgia and Auburn. And hell, Shane, I even got some notes here before we get going. Of course, Georgia won last year 21-14 at Auburn. Georgia's won 8 of the last 10. And 15 of the last 19. So Georgia's dominated this thing. But how about this stat, Shane? This is the first time this series has been played outside the month of November since 1936. So almost 100 years here we're talking. And here's another incredible stat. Auburn actually has a winning record in Athens. So they're 18-15 all time in Athens. College game day is going to be down there. So there's a ton of history going into this matchup, but, you know, obviously the big story there in Athens, what's going to be going down with the quarterback position? Is it going to be Stetson? Is JT Daniels, now that he's cleared, is he good to go? I'm kind of, I don't know, I don't think that necessarily means they're just going to throw him into the lineup. We'll see. But if you had to guess right now, of course, Kirby talks about it here, about half his press conference, who are you going to go with your starting quarterback if you're Georgia? Are you going to go Stetson, the guy that rallied us, or are you going JT Daniels? Are you throwing him to the wolves?
No, I think you play a hot hand, and right now Stetson's that hot hand. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him come out. And, I mean, it's extremely short leash. And even if he is successful, I still think we're going to see JT at some point because, that's the guy. At the end of the day, that's exactly who Kirby wants out there. He's not going to throw him out there fresh off this rehab.
So let me ask you this, Shane, because last year, now obviously I just said it was 21-14 was the final score, but Georgia really dominated this thing, if you remember. And the way I remember it playing out was Auburn kind of got hot late in the game. And I think they scored back-to-back touchdowns. But I think the final one came, you know, nearly at the very end of the game, if I recall. So it wasn't really that close. But again, that was a true freshman, Bo Nix. Now he's a little bit more seasoned. He looked, you know, I thought he looked a little shaky in the first half against Kentucky. He looked a lot better in the second half.
Yeah.
He's got 218 passes without an interception. That's second best in the nation. So I don't know. How many points do you think Auburn can score? Well, you know, I'm not asking for a straight score prediction, I guess. But do you have confidence now that we've seen a little bit more of Bo Nix in his sophomore season? We've seen these receivers. You know, are they going to have a little bit more success against this Georgia defense? Or do you think it's going to be more of the same?
Well, they don't call him Bo Efficiency for nothing, Mike, you know? Hey, I like that, man. I trust me. But there's a lot of pressure on that. You ever find yourself watching a game and they're like, oh, man, he's went 18 passes without a drop, you know? And you're just like, and then all of a sudden they're not doing those 30-yard bombs anymore. They're doing little 5-yard dumps to the running back because they're trying to salvage their numbers. So I always hate that. Or what's even worse is the kicker. It's like, this guy hasn't missed a kick within the 40-yard line in forever, you know? And it's just like, oh, dude, he's so going wide left on this. So, man, first off, let's talk about this game. This is the Deep South's oldest rivalry. Fun fact, Mike, I'm going to just do a little game here. When do you think the first game was between Auburn and Georgia?
1898.
Ooh, not bad. 1892. Mm-hmm. I was just looking up. I love looking up some of these and how they started and things like that. And, you know, a couple of fun facts. You know, one of the late Pat Dye, you know, he played for the University of Georgia. He was a lettered offensive lineman and ended up coaching for Auburn. And do you know the most famous Auburn player to wind up coaching for Georgia?
No, I can't think of it.
It's Dooley.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I was just reading something, and Pat says it's a unique thing. It's like playing against your brother. I don't think anybody who plays in that game can ever forget it. It just doesn't matter much where it's played or somebody's record is. It's always intense. It's always tough. And at the same time, it's family because these guys, let's face it, are less than 3 hours away. So there's a lot of divided. A lot of people talk about Alabama and Auburn, but there's a lot of the houses divided from Auburn and Georgia fans. Just the fact that they're so close in proximity. So this is a huge game, and it doesn't carry the weight like it should. This does, even though Georgia has owned it the last 3 years. Thing came down within a touchdown last year. You know, if you look at the series dating all the way back, it's pretty split. It's a 50-50 thing, you know? So, I think this is going to be the closest year yet. I mean, in a long time. So, even Vegas is agreeing with us there. So, but back to your thoughts on Bo, I think, what was your question on Bo, by the way?
Just if he'll have more success in his second season. But, I mean, I know Georgia's defense is still elite, but
yeah, I got you.
You know, he just didn't have a ton of success till basically the end of the game.
Yeah. Back with Bo, I think that he is going to have more success. And I think it's more to do with the new playbook, maybe. Maybe, you know, him and Chad are still figuring each other out, and they can't wait any longer because now you've got Georgia, which is going to be the toughest defense that they're probably going to face this year. So I think last week, the fact that you saw that progression through the game is as an Auburn fan, you know, it's got to make you feel good going into this game against Georgia.
Now, let me ask you about this, though, Shane, because I think there's, you know, a couple narratives going into this one. Obviously, Georgia, while they, you know, the final score was pretty lopsided, they struggled mightily in the SEC. I think they were really bailed out the fact that LSU lost, because otherwise this Georgia struggling against Arkansas would have been a bigger storyline. Mm-hmm. But here you got, you know, it already seems like the pressure is a little bit mounting. You know, this is something that we've been saying all offseason, and Georgia fans have been, you know, all over us, because what happens if this is the third year in a row where Kirby's got a different offensive coordinator and he changed it 2 years ago to get better, they got significantly worse. Mm-hmm. Not saying that Todd Monken is just some bust based on one game. That's ridiculous. But, hell, we got off to such a bad start. I mean, there's been a lot better coaches that have failed miserably. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I'm not saying that it's going to be total disaster, but if it is, I mean, how much pressure is on Kirby? The man, I've said it time and time again, I think he's the best recruiter in the nation.
Yeah.
And they got worked last year in the SEC championship game. He can't beat Nick Saban. I mean, how many years are we going to be beating our head against the wall trying to get a damn offense going down here? And then on the flip side, Auburn, very, very dangerous team. You know, they were the popular upset pick last week. What'd they do? They just went out there and took care of business, made Kentucky look like a pretender. And now, all of a sudden, if Auburn goes in here and beats Georgia, I mean, I think all the pressure's on Georgia to win this game. I don't think there's any pressure on Auburn. And if they come in here and they beat them, I think you're going to see Auburn as a top five team, and I think that's going to be a legitimate ranking.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, man. And I think there is more pressure on Georgia. And I just – because, you like you said, you ask yourself, if not now, then when? You know, you can't turn off the Mark Richt comparisons.
Right.
And now you're saying, okay, you know, Mark could recruit, Kirby can recruit, but we like Kirby because he was going to be able to develop these players and make them national champs, make them SEC champs. And you know, I get it. The first couple of years, you've got that leash. Well, I'm building something here. But when you're popping out number one, number two recruiting classes, and you're still sitting there having a hard time beating teams like Alabama and LSU, you know, then the fans are going to get restless, and rightfully so, because they've already showed you that just about any coach can get the talent to Georgia, but can they make that talent good enough to compete for the upper tier teams of the SEC? So I'm not panicking yet. I know I said all that. I'm not. Week one, I think that was a tune-up game. I think a lot of these players were overlooking Arkansas. You know, they realized how ill-prepared they were, and I think they'll be focused, and I think this will be a better ball game. But if they drop this one to Auburn, yeah, there's going to be some rowdy and restless fans down there in Athens, man.
All right, well, let's kick it over to Kirby Smart talking about what he's seen already, Chad Morris, his impact on this Auburn offense. He spiels here for about a while on his quarterback situation, Mathis, Stetson, JT Daniels, how cleared is he? And then finally on Bo Nix and the progression he's seen in his game going into his second year.
And, you know, I got a lot of respect for the coordinators, Coach Steele, Chad, both really good. You know, I think what Chad's done for their offense is really shows on tape the ability to use their skill and get their skill players the ball from different locations. You can see it showing up already. I know you guys will want to ask the quarterback question, and you'll want to ask it all week. All I can tell you is we're going to continue to work with all the guys we've got to put the best guy in there to give us the best opportunity to win the football games. DeJuan did not play as bad as it seemed to some, and thought he did some good things watching the tape. And he had some unfortunate bad breaks that happened while he was in at quarterback. JT will be cleared. But I don't know how much that changes the picture in terms of reps and development. We'll be looking at everybody across the board. JT's got to be able to show us that he can function efficiently and do it with his knee being able to do it. We always thought he would be cleared by this time anyway, but those guys will all compete, as well as Carson will too, and continue to grow at the quarterback position.
Hey, Coach. Yeah, and you're right. I got a quarterback question right off the bat. As far as Stetson's performance, so kind of what stood out the most? It looked like he did some of his better work when working against pressure, And one thing on JT, if you don't mind, yeah, he said he's going to get it clear. What were the hurdles Ron Corson was looking for him to overcome?
Well, Ron would have to explain that in depth. You're looking for percentage, strength index, biodex, testing, girth, his knee being closer to the same size as the other one. They do a single leg hop test. They measure his ability to move around on that knee compared to his other knee, and they've been looking for certain barometers to be able to hit that that number, and he was able to do that. So that's very fortunate for him. But he's still got to be able to go out there and prove to us that he could do it in the game-like situations, in the practice-like situations, and that's not easy to do during the week at times. But
yeah, Coach, on Dwan, he took a big hit on the sideline in the side of the head, and I saw you talk to him when he came over, tell him that he needed to get down. I just wonder, you know, certainly with his situation, did that ding him a little bit, you know, because he seemed like to not play quite as well after that?
No, actually it was the opposite. He was fired up. He was pumped. He loves the game. He loves the competitive nature, and he doesn't believe in getting down. He likes contact, and I thought that was one of the highlights, that he took that hit and that he kept going. You know, I think what got me a little bit was the awareness the next time, and he missed the yard marker the next time on a third down where he had an opportunity to scramble for it and get the third down. He never saw, and that happens with a young quarterback. I remember a big game where Jake Fromm took off running on a third down, and he slid before the first down on third down, and I was so upset with him. But a lot of guys don't have the awareness to know exactly where that is on the sideline, and he just missed it. It had nothing to do with the hit that he took earlier. As a matter of fact, he was pumped about the hit. He's been waiting 2 years to get hit, so he felt relieved.
Yeah, Bo Nix, coach, has the second longest active streak in the country behind Trevor without throwing a pick. Is that a product of a lot of dink and dunks, or you see him the ability to kind of sling it all over the field?
No, he's got a vertical passing game now. He's got a great arm. He makes really good decisions. I mean, I think the not the dink and dunk, it's the decision-making he has that gives him the opportunity to not throw picks. Smart quarterbacks avoid picks because they don't throw into situations that are adverse. And he's got a really good set of receivers. When you talk about experience in an SEC with the guys they've got at wideout, I mean, those guys seem like they've been playing there forever. You know, Seth's one of the best there is. Eli Stowe's been there forever, and we know how fast Schwartz is. They've got a lot of good wideouts in terms of their skill set on offense. So he's got guys to protect him around it. And, you know, he's a coach's son that's been around the game his whole life. He knows good decisions, and he's a really good athlete. People don't understand how good a runner he actually is.
Yeah, hey, Kirby. You mentioned earlier that the defense, after, like, you know, giving it a second look, that the defense didn't do as well as you initially thought. In what areas or ways are you talking about as regards to the defense?
Good question. You know, the biggest thing is we had some mental bust that they didn't expose us on. You know, things that if you're sitting there watching, you're going, okay, we didn't do that right. We didn't handle that well. And someone's going to, maybe with better players, will be able to expose us. Mistakes that were made, communication errors. One side's playing one thing, another side's playing another. We're not on the same page. I mean, typically they're early in the season mistakes, and they're one play away from being a big play, which we saw the explosive play that happened. Certainly could have been more of those if guys aren't on the same page. And it's easy to highlight that. And the great thing about this defense is they'll listen to you, because we tell them honestly. We say, hey, this guy's a really good player. This guy's not a good player. When you're honest with players and you go in and tell them, hey, this is not right and this is right, this is doing it wrong and this is doing it right, they listen to you. And you know, I know a lot of people think because of the pick six and the safety that all was great. There was a lot missed there, and a lot of opportunities where we ended up one-on-one that if one guy breaks a tackle, it's a touchdown, and we need two people there. We need three people there.
All right, Shane. So, you know, based on these comments, it's incredibly hard to read what they're going to do here at the quarterback position. JT Daniels, I think, is clearly going to make an appearance in this game, but I kind of lean towards you. Not everyone, but most people I'm seeing, they think it's just going to be JT Daniels immediately. Mm-hmm. I think you got to go with Stetson just because, you know, he showed you that he can give you a spark. He's not going to kill you. And I would not even be surprised. I think we're going to see Mathis in this game too, as more, you know, probably not as a passer, but, you know, just as like a change of pace, wildcat type quarterback for a little bit, probably not a ton, but I think they'll mix it up here. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to see him come in. I mean, something like the second half, right after halftime, you know, just mix it up and let him run a series or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think the quarterback position is going to be a kind of a revolving door this week. And I think Kirby's just going to play the hot hand. So whoever's out there and doing it, he's going to keep doing it. Now, if one of them aren't, then he's definitely going to mix it up.
Yeah, now they're going to get this settled pretty quick because they got Tennessee the following week, Alabama the mm-hmm. next. So
yeah,
there's no time to mess around here.
No, not at all.
All right, let's kick it down to the Plains.
Get ready, Toomer's Corner. Auburn's coming to roll you. Final score, Auburn 48, Alabama 45.
Where Gus Malzahn met with the media on Tuesday, and he talked about, you know, what the possibility of Georgia playing JT Daniels kind of does for Auburn's offense or defense and having to adjust to that. I thought this was funny. He's talking about Georgia's run defense being the best in the nation or the best that they faced last year. And we'll get to it in a second, but Kirby kind of took issue with that on the Auburn rushing attack and how that looked week one. And I thought this was pretty interesting too. He talked about the home field advantage. Road teams in the SEC last week, Shane, were 5-2. Gus Malzahn talks about all this, and then we'll discuss it on the other side.
And now that JT Daniels is cleared to play, I'm wondering how hard is that to scout out and really with a new concept? I realize there is tape on him, but how hard is that to...
Well, I mean, in a way, it's like another first game preparation. You just got to be prepared for, you know, to be able to adjust. And, you know, last week I thought our defense adjusted well in the second half. And so, you know, if they end up playing him, it could be a little bit of, you know, a period of time just to adjust on what their plan is.
Guys, Georgia did a really good job of stopping the run against Arkansas last week. What sort of stands out to you about how they play the run and the challenges that present?
Yeah, of course, you know, last year we played them late in the season. I don't think they'd given up a rushing touchdown the whole year. And, you know, we had one on a quarterback run, and they got just about everybody back. So, you know, you're looking at not just, you know, one of the best rushing defense, if not the best rushing defense in the country, but one of the best overall defenses. And, you know, after last year, I felt like that they were the best defense we played all year after playing them. And they got the majority of the guys back. They make you earn it, and that's the key. They make you earn it. They mix things up. You know, they check when you check, and they're a very sound unit.
Hey, guys, question about the run game. A lot of different ideas and concepts you guys use against Kentucky. What kinds of – is he still kind of experimenting a little bit, or are you going to start winding down on some specific concepts you're going to try against Georgia?
You know, the Chad's got, you know, the playbook. I mean, he can do a lot of different things in the run game. And, you know, so you'll see us each week. You know, I really feel like we'll improve in the run game, but, you know, having a lot of different things that you can do, I think is really good. And I think that, you know, the more that we can settle in on five linemen, like we talked about Sunday, that gelling up front will also help, you know, as far as the run game goes.
Hey, Gus, I know you talked about the secondary moments ago, but Georgia led the nation last year in fewest yards per reception. And I know they were effective against Auburn. I think Anthony had less than 7 yards a catch. What makes Georgia so good in that category, and how important is it for Auburn to improve that category in this year's meet?
Yeah, you know, first of all, they got really good players, and then they're very well coached. So it's a combination of that. And like I said, they do a good job mixing things up, but they also do a good job of keeping things in front of them. It's tough to get explosive plays. And, of course, that'll be a key, you know, as far as you ask the question. You know, this one, you know, you're going to have some explosive plays in the passing game to be able to score points. And, you know, so I think that's important.
Yeah, because I think road teams were 5-2 on Saturday. Can you talk about how the limited capacity has kind of taken away a little bit of the home field advantage and how that might work in your favor Saturday when you go between the hedges?
Yeah, you know, it's a unique year. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And I think everybody's learning as they go. But I do expect it to be loud. You know, I do expect it to be loud over there. And we'll have to be able to adjust to that. So, you know, like I said, each week I think teams will learn. This will be our first road game. You know, we were able to have a home game. And I thought our crowd did a really good job with our students, like I talked about after the game. So we expect it to be loud. And we'll just learn after this first road game.
Hey, Gus, you kind of alluded to it earlier with the success Bo had against Georgia last year. What did you see out of him with his legs in that first game, and how important do you think that'll be against a good run defense?
Yeah, I think, you know, you got to have everything available against a really good defense, whether it's run, pass, or whatever. And Bo did some really good things last year. I mean, you know, it was a tough loss. You know, we were down by seven, and we got the ball down there on the 19-yard line, and we completed one, and it was a tough overturn that I think could have made a difference in the game. But I thought Bo did a really good job of bringing us back. And, you know, in the fourth quarter, I felt like we really had a chance with his leadership. So he's got a year under his belt, and I think that'll help him, you know, with this game, playing him, you know, one other time before.
Hey, Gus, obviously you guys had wins against Georgia in Auburn in 2017, 2013, but the program's had a hard time winning in Athens recently. Any thoughts about why that might be? And do you think reduced attendance might help a little bit in that regard?
You know, I think, first of all, it's one of the toughest places to play in the league, okay? That's just the facts of the matter. You got to play good football to have a chance to win. And then if it's a close game, you got to find a way to make those plays to win. So, and like I said earlier, I mean, we'll see about the crowd, but we do expect it to be loud anyway. But, you know, we'll know more after the game about, you know, as far as if it's the same or not.
All right, Shane, so it's true road teams in the SEC were 5-2 last week. Now, maybe you look at that and say, well, I guess these limited crowds, maybe there's not much of a home field advantage anymore, but mm-hmm. I kind of look at it like Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee. I mean, some of the better teams in the league were on the road. So I mm-hmm. think that has a little bit more to do with that 5-2 record, because the only, you know, real big upset I thought of a home team was Mississippi State being LSU.
Right.
But I think there's a little something to that, to where it's just not going to be as rowdy as it has been. And I don't think it's possible to do that. And the biggest issue, and this is something that we kind of talked about before the season started, but once LSU, you know, kind of got in a hole there, I think they were lacking that energy that the Tiger Stadium crowd gives them. So not saying that's going to happen to Georgia, but I think it's going to happen to somebody this week where, you know, a home team gets down in a hole and there's just not that crowd to breathe life into them. Could you see that happening?
Yeah, no, I think it's a very, I don't know, because there was times during some of these games you could definitely tell there was a little bit of a home field advantage. Mm-hmm. I've listened to several of the commentators make the joke like, you can't tell this place ain't packed, you know. So I don't know if that's true or not, because I wasn't there, but I still think that they could be influential if they want. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't think so, man, because the fact of the matter is there's a huge difference between 20,000 people yelling at you and 100,000 people yelling at you. I think there could have been an opportunity if this thing were held in Death Valley and that thing was packed. There's a chance that, you know, you could have rattled. So I think the noise is a huge thing. I think the fans being there is a huge disadvantage. Or not a disadvantage, but it's not near as much as an advantage for the home teams as it has been in the past. No doubt about it.
All right, final thing on this game, Shane. This was just hilarious, but Kirby, he met with the media here briefly. I mean, he's already done it twice. They're working overtime down there in Athens. But on Tuesday evening, he was asked about Gus Malzahn, one of those comments we just played for you, when Gus said, you know, this is the best defense we faced, and this is going to be the best team we face. Kirby was asked about it, and my goodness, he had a great response here.
Kirby, today Gus said that y'all had probably the most talented overall team in the league. Do you think that's accurate, and how do you think that's assessed across the league when y'all look at other programs?
I think if you ask somebody the week of the game, the team they're playing will have the most talent in the league. And then next week, that team will have the most talent. And then the next week, that team will have the most talent, and that's called coach speak. So, thanks, Gus. He has the most talent in the SEC himself.
All right, you know it's a day of rivalry when you can't even agree on, you know, who's got talent, who doesn't. And they're basically calling each other liars and all this. But, yeah, I mean, I think it goes without saying, when Georgia's on your schedule, even if you got Alabama on your schedule, I don't think it's that bold of a statement to say, you know, that they got a hell of a roster and there's no one going to be more talented than this group.
Until next week. yeah, I hate coach speak. You know, but I tell you, man, we've got a lot of coaches in the SEC that are a little bit more transparent than ones we've had in the past. So I really like that, too. So now, obviously, Gus Malzahn is not that one. You know, he's going to coach speak you to death. So I get it. But let's face it, Georgia is one of the best defenses that they're going to face. And I think Auburn's, you know, sneaky good too. They're both 1-0. I mean, this is a top seven rivalry, or we're going to have, is it seven? Is that what Auburn is, seventh?
They're either seven or nine. I can't remember. It's one or the other.
Okay.
It's a top 10 showdown.
It's game day, right?
It is. Yeah. They finally left the ACC.
Hell yeah. I mean, that's still going to be, I think we're going to get the best out of both these teams come Saturday. No doubt about it. This is one they've had circled for a while, and nothing against Arkansas, you know, nothing against Kentucky. Kentucky was a great matchup. I'm sure they weren't overlooking them either, but this is a big rivalry for a reason. And this is one of the earliest rivalries that we're going to get to see. So I'm pumped up for it, Mike.
Hey, Shay, well, before we move on, let's remind the listeners we're brought to you by MyBookie, the online sports book. Head on over to MyBookie.ag today. All new customers receive a 100% deposit match up to $1,000. That means if you're a new customer to MyBookie.ag and you put in the promo code THATSEC, that's THATSEC, they will match your initial deposit up to $1,000, so you could potentially start with $2,000 to gamble on, Shane, immediately. And we got this college football firing up. We're going to get into some picks here. But, man, I'm just fired up that college football is finally here. And the only thing that makes football better, in my opinion, is drinking some beer and betting all these games. So head on over to mybookie.ag. Once again, that promo code is THATSEC over at mybookie.ag. Thousands of cross sports wagers, props, parlays, all that. Winning season begins today only at MyBookie with that promo code, THATSEC. All right, Shane, let's kick it on down to Rocky Top. The Tennessee and Missouri are going to face off this weekend. And Missouri, believe it or not, I mean, I'm sure you know this, leads the series 5-3. But Tennessee's won three of the last five, including last season when they beat Missouri 24-20. But I don't know, did you see it, Shade, somewhat, the Mizzou cast, a podcast I've actually been on before, but they're trolling people all season. You know, there's so many fans that say Missouri doesn't belong in the SEC. Mm-hmm. So they're finding reasons why, you know, the rest of the teams don't belong. And they tweeted Tennessee don't belong. And my God, Vol Nation got on them. They don't know they're getting trolled, but hey, I like it, man. We're trying to make this into a rivalry here, because I don't think Missouri's got a ton of respect for Tennessee, and certainly Tennessee fans don't have a ton of respect for Missouri. And hey, that's what you need to have a rivalry here. You know what?
Yeah, that was a tough start when Mizzou first came over, because there was a couple games I thought we were going to win. And so it just found out we just needed to fire a coach and send him over there as an offensive coordinator to backdoor this thing, you know? So, trust me, that's one of those games, Mizzou lately. I mean, because I was scarred for 5 years when they came over. I was just like, man, we can't beat these guys for some reason. And now going into them, you know, there's still been some great ball games, and you got that thing in the pit of your stomach, like, oh God, we're going to lose this thing. So, this is a good ball game. Don't sleep on this one. So, and I'm glad, I will tell you this, one thing I hate about Mizzou, other than their rock garden they got over there, is the camera angle. Yeah, you ever notice that? I just it drives me nuts watching a game at Missouri. I don't know what they're doing. It's just like, it's almost like I'm sitting on the, I get it. It's, I don't know.
I think it has to do with the placement of just the stadium and where they got to put the camera. You know what?
Yeah, I think that's it. So, but anyway, other than that, man, this is still going to be a hell of a game.
What are your thoughts on just, you know, the matchup with, you know, Tennessee, while they won and we praised them for, you know, coming away with a win week one when they didn't play that well. And then on the flip side, you know, everyone thought Missouri was just going to get steamrolled. And it's not like they were, you know, threatening Alabama at any point, but I thought they showed enough to where, you know, they showed up and played tough. They just got beat by a much better team at this point. Yep. And then in the second half, you know, I believe the score was 28-3 at halftime. When the score is 28-3, it's pretty easy to just pack it in and say, well, we'll get them next week. And that's right. Not what Missouri did. They basically played Alabama even for the second half. So they didn't give up. They're fighting hard for Coach Drinkwitz, and he's waiting for that. Obviously, he's only been there one game, but waiting for a marquee win and beating a ranked Tennessee team. I mean, that's got to be all the motivation in the world for the Tigers. And I think this is one Tennessee's, you know, they've got to be careful. If they play like they did last week, I think they can get beat in this game.
Well, see, that's what I think. This comes down to coaching, Mike. I think both teams are flawed, obviously, in week one. And who makes the adjustments? It's easy when you're kind of practicing against you. I mean, Tennessee didn't really have a scrimmage. They didn't have that time to just kind of sit back and judge how good their offense or defense is going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of individual drills, it sounded like. You know, they got to showcase that against South Carolina, and obviously some flaws. There were some mistakes, big mistakes made on both sides of the ball. And same thing with Mizzou. But I think Mizzou came in a little more prepared than Tennessee did. So, but that's why I'm saying this week too, the adjustments that you make during this week are crucial. And whoever, you know, writes those wrongs coming into this game, that they're going to come out victorious. I guarantee it. It's coming down to coaching, Mike, this week.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's kick it over to Jeremy Pruitt, who previewed this matchup. And remember, you asked me about Sean Schamberger, and you know, he missed the opener. That really killed him, with Shai Smith just went wild. So he talks about Schamberger and Darrell Middleton, who Middleton has tweeted he's going to play, so we'll see. Tennessee's issues on third down. They only converted one third down last week. It's incredibly hard to win a football game when you only convert one third down.
That was a miracle pass, by the way. I mean, it was a top three sports center play. That's the only third down conversion we had.
On DeAndre Johnson, he won SEC Defensive Lineman of the Week. He had an outstanding game. On Paxton Brooks, Pruitt tried to make a little joke here. It didn't go too well for him. And then finally on Jeremy Banks, who, you know, we didn't even know if he was going to be on the team a couple months ago, and he played lights out, but maybe with a little bit too much emotion out there on the field.
Jeremy, why were Middleton and Schamberger unavailable on Saturday?
Well, we talked about last week about from a standpoint of COVID and everything that's going on. I really just don't think it's fair to the players to, you know, probably put out exactly why they're not there. Hopefully, if everything works out, we can get these guys back very soon.
Was either one a player discipline scenario? Or
No, it's not player discipline.
Jeremy, when you were able to kind of relook at the game, what were some things that had jumped out to you that maybe you didn't realize live?
Well, I didn't realize how poor we were on third down offensively at the time. You know, there was probably three offensive possessions that we had a chance to kind of maybe end the game or put the game a little bit, put some distance between us and them that we didn't do when we had good field position. So, you know, we've got to do a better job of closing out. You know, defensively, we've got to get more turnovers. You know, we got one turnover in the game. The ball was on the ground with a minute before the half there. We had a chance to recover a fumble, which could have been huge, and we didn't. Got to be able to play the ball in the back end with a secondary and get some interceptions out of those guys.
Johnson was the SEC lineman of the week. He had a good performance. He had six tackles, 2.5 sacks. What do you can say about your lineman, especially, you know, having DeAndre Johnson, you know, the SEC lineman of the week?
Well, I think DeAndre's had a really good camp. You know, he's one of the guys that has not missed a practice. He's been here every day, and it showed. You know, he's he's practiced well. you know, every day. He's a guy that's been in our system for 3 years, has some maturity about him, has really worked hard this offseason. And, you know, he's got to do it week in and week out. We need him to do that. Well, you know, when Paxton signed here, he was like 6'5", 157. He's worked really hard in the weight room. I think he's about 195 now. I would have liked to have seen him on that bad snap to run over two or three folks and get us a first down. But, you know, he's kicked the ball well, and we need him to continue to do that. I was trying to make a joke there. They didn't, none of y'all think that was too funny, I see.
Coach, I know.
Well, you know, getting penalties is part of how you play, you know. So I've coached a lot of really good players, and Jeremy has a chance to be a really good player, but he's not going to be a really good player unless he plays penalty free. You know, you can play aggressive, you can play physical, but you can do it in between the whistles, and it goes back to decision making. And I'm sure when the game started, Jeremy didn't walk out there and say, man, I want to get two penalties, okay? But he did, and that can't happen. But, you know, for the first game playing there, I thought him and Quaverius Crouch both done some things that were really good. We got messed up a couple of times there in coverage. But you got to think about both of these guys. Q played outside linebacker all last year because we thought it was the best fit for our team. We moved him inside for spring ball, and, you know, these guys, they ain't played in a lot of live reps. So for the first time playing, there was some good, and there's probably some bad for both of them. But there are two guys that we feel like that kind of play the same position, and we have packages to where we can get them, you know, those two guys and Henry on the field at the same time. We just didn't think we were ready for that right now. So those guys have a lot of work to do this week. I think you'll see a lot of improvement out of both of those guys, especially after having a live contest.
All right, Shane. So Pruitt, you know, not totally satisfied with his group. You know, it's kind of the same thing that I've been saying. They didn't play that well, but you play good enough to win because you recruit hard and you coach good. And, you know, Jeremy Banks, you know, he flashed. He wasn't the best player on defense, but he seemed kind of like the most violent in a good way. You know, you need that edge on defense. That's what these Nick Saban, Kirby Smart defenses do. And obviously Jeremy Pruitt from the same tree here. So I don't know, thoughts on what Coach Pruitt had to say here.
Yeah. I mean, every team's got a handful of these guys, right? They're violent. They want to just play past the whistle sometimes. And he got popped with it. I think he got a personal foul outside.
He got a couple, I think. He got two.
I mean, you definitely want to rein that back in. But, you know, I think about other teams like Kelvin Joseph, another one. That's their DNA. They get so wrapped up into these games that they just can't turn it off sometimes. So, but that kind of energy can help motivate a team. That, I mean, you know, it can make the other players say, man, I'm not giving my all, you know. So I kind of like it, but, you know, I don't like 15-yard penalties, though, Mike, you know. So, I mean, because sometimes those could really hurt you. So, but, no, I think it's okay.
All right, now let's flip it to the other side. Let's jump on down to Columbia, Missouri.
M-I-Z-Z-O-U!
You know, keep in mind, this is one thing I kind of thought of this week. Obviously, Missouri played Alabama last week. Now they're playing Tennessee. And I think when Coach Drinkwitz looked at that on the schedule, he probably, in the back of his mind, liked it because Alabama, Tennessee, running the same defense. You know, most of the coaches there at Tennessee, like Coach Ansley, obviously Coach Pruitt, Coach Niedermeyer, a lot of these guys on Tennessee staff, they coached under Saban. So, I mean, that's where they learned the system, and Tennessee's roster, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to build a roster on defense, you know, damn near identical to Alabama. So,
Yeah.
There's a little bit of an advantage there, I think, with Missouri, Coach Drinkwitz, his new quarterback, Sean Robinson, and breaking down this defense. It's one thing to go from the Mike Leach offense to the Georgia offense. You know, it's like night and day different. But here we got two consecutive SEC opponents, basically the same defense. I think that also plays to the advantage of Missouri this weekend. So what are your thoughts on that?
What are you? You trying to hurt my feelings here, Mike? You making me try to make me nervous? Getting their beer? Is that what you're trying to do? Jeez, I'm not overlooking Mizzou. Okay, I get it. What's the spread on this thing right now? Has it changed any?
Yeah. So actually, every line in the SEC has shifted, but this one opened. Tennessee was favored by 13.5.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now it's down to 11.5. No, it was 9 at one point, but I guess it's shifted back to Tennessee. So still Tennessee's favorite, but not by as many. They're favored by 11.5.
Yeah, you just can't overlook anybody, man. I mean, there should be absolutely no trap games in 2020, Mike. I mean, seriously, anybody thinks that there's a trap game, they should turn on that Mississippi State and LSU game just as a constant reminder playing in the background that any given Saturday, if you don't watch it, you're going to get smoked. So I don't think Tennessee, I think they're looking to rebound and build off a horrible – I mean, don't get me wrong, a win's a win. But there was a lot of mistakes, and I guarantee they corrected a lot of those during film study and practice this week, and they'll be ready. And just like Mizzou, I think this is going to be a good game, and it wouldn't surprise me if this line gets a little bit closer toward Saturday.
All right, well, let's kick it over to Coach Drinkwitz, Shane, talking about Sean Robinson and his debut there for Missouri. And the plans moving forward with the quarterbacks. Talks about he's never been to Neyland Stadium, never even been to Knoxville. Mm. And then on the improvements, he expects week two, the second week of the season, everyone expects the coaching and just the players, everything to get better. So Coach kind of jumps into that as well.
Hey, Eli, outside of some of the negative plays we saw, just how do you think Sean played and after watching the film of his game?
Negative plays are part of the plays as a quarterback. It's the holistic approach. I mean, if you don't throw those, this is a hypothetical, but if you didn't throw those two interceptions, you played a good game. You threw those two interceptions. So, you know, I thought he showed some toughness. He took some hits in the pocket and stayed in there. But again, I think he had somewhere minus 40, minus 35 yards rushing because of the sacks and negative plays, and those just cannot happen, and those have to get corrected, and you know, those are part of the game. So there's really no, well, if you know, he played good, but I mean, you either played good or you didn't, and right now nobody played well enough to win. So we all got to improve. I didn't coach well enough to win. I didn't call plays well enough to win, and at the quarterback position, we have to improve.
Yeah, Eli, kind of touching on the quarterbacks like Dave did, do you ultimately want to get to a point where you're playing like one guy the entire game, or are you kind of okay with maybe having multiple guys taking meaningful snaps in a game for like the whole season?
I'm comfortable playing multiple guys meaningful snaps throughout the season. I don't think this is going to be a typical season like we've ever had before. I mean, you look at the news today with the Tennessee Titans and Minnesota Vikings and the COVID stuff, and Notre Dame's had a ton. I mean, we just don't know. Miami-Dade County spiked, you know. I mean, I don't think we have enough data to think that we're going to be able to go through the entire season with one quarterback. And so.
Hey, Coach, going to Tennessee, Neyland Stadium has more than 100,000, you know, fans usually. The fact that that's going to be limited, do you feel like that's an advantage for you guys getting to play there with limited fans in the road team?
I have no idea. I've never been to Neyland Stadium. I've never been to Knoxville, Tennessee. You know, that's the thing about football. Each week is a whole new set of challenges. And you know, you're going to have to really zone in and focus on what you can control. You know, anytime you go on the road, it's about your team and the energy you create, the focus that you have, the competitive fight that your team will put to all get on the same page and feed off each other's energy. So to me, whether there's 100,000 people in the stands or whether there's 2,500 cardboard box cutouts, you know, it's going to be about our team and our energy and our focus. And really doesn't have anything to do with them.
Yeah, good afternoon, Coach. I know every year is different, and this one's certainly more unique than others. But can you talk about the type of improvements that you typically see, just from your experience, that you typically see in teams from week one to week two after they've had a chance to play a game?
Yeah, I think the tackling and sustained blocking is usually number one. Clock management, special teams is usually another area. And then the speed of the game. Just getting understanding of the speed and what to expect on either side of the ball. You know, there's so many unknowns usually in that week one, from what new schemes are they going to play to, you know, how do you physically match up? And I think that's usually what shows up, speed of the game, tackling, fundamentals.
All right, Shane. So when this went live, I just tweeted out what Drinkwitz said about Neyland in Knoxville, and my God, Vol Twitter jumped all over that one. So I mean, that just added some fuel to this fire we got going here. But thoughts on what
he
Coach
never
said.
Been to Knoxville, huh? Doesn't even know how loud it gets. You know, Mike, I ain't never been to Grand Canyon, but I can imagine how big it is. You know what I'm saying? I ain't ever been to the Colosseum there in Rome, but I could imagine what it looks like just from the pictures I've seen online. So I don't know. I would love to have a full Neyland. That would be fantastic, but obviously that's not going to happen this year. But hopefully we can, with our allotment of what, 25,000 mm-hmm. people, you know, which I think people are lying, Mike, because I've seen a couple of these games and it looks like it's a little bit more than 1/4. You know what I'm saying? I don't mm-hmm. know if somebody's leaving a back gate open or something like that. So,
well, some of these might be the cardboard cutouts. Who knows? Those people, they're kind of hard to make out sometimes.
That's me, man. I'm gonna come in with one. You know, just like, hey, I'm sorry. I'm working here, guys. So, I may sneak in myself. So I don't know. Create some noise. That we got to do that. You know, because that's one thing that he hasn't faced right now. He's had a home field advantage. So this will be his first, you know, I mean, he went to South Carolina last year. I mean, obviously he's been to some loud stadiums before, but this team, this ball club hasn't. So I think it's going to be good to make some noise and you know, make Neyland as rowdy as possible.
All right, Shane, let's jump on down to the other Columbia, South Carolina, where they're set to host the Gators this weekend, and Florida's coming off a school record 642 yards of offense in an SEC game. Never done that before. 41st meeting in this series. Florida leads 28-9 with three ties, but the series is tied at 5-5 the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. But the Gators have won two in a row in the series. South Carolina fans credit a lot of that to the refs last year. If you remember, this was the controversial game. Yeah, many flags and missed flags and everything. But there's obviously a lot on the line here for Will Muschamp against you know, the Gators, and you know, they're big underdogs at home. And now we got, you know, fire Muschamp was trending on Saturday night, even though they lost, you know, a game they were underdogs in, and now they've got a hot Florida team coming in here. So I don't know, what are your thoughts on this one going into it? And, you know, can South Carolina make this game competitive, you know, with a new quarterback and new coordinator and everything? And certainly a lot going against the Gamecocks heading into this matchup.
Absolutely, man. This is a sneaky good game every single year. I mean, just have you look? I mean, let me just take you back, okay? Yeah, last year was a little, it was 11 point game, but like you said, there was a lot of controversy in that thing. Mm-hmm. There was opportunities throughout that ball game for South Carolina to win. Extremely close game. Year before, a 4 point game. Year before, an 8 point game. 13 point game. 10 point game. You know, it's just a couple scores every single year. And I don't expect this one to be any different. You know, Florida's high on the hog right now, buddy. You know, if these boys are reading their clippings, you know, if they're jumping on there to SEC Mike's articles, you know what I'm saying? they may say, you know what, we've made it. We're at the top of this hill. We're going to be champs. And South Carolina, You know, they made a lot of mistakes last week and could easily be sitting there at 1-0. And some good things came out of that game against Tennessee, and I think they work on it. I think if they got this us against the world mentality and they get this locker room right, don't be surprised if they don't give Florida another run for their money.
You know, last time I checked, Mike Bobo, I believe, has had a lot of success against Todd Grantham's defense in the past. So that's another little caveat here. I mean, it's kind of the same thing we're saying with a lot of these first-year coaches or first-year coordinators where, you know, they didn't get an extended offseason. We all know all that. But I think a lot of these units and some of these teams are going to get better as we get into the season because they're just lacking reps in the system right now. And South Carolina, you know, the bright side for them, Colin Hill, who looked, you know, I thought for the most part outstanding against Tennessee. He's the experienced one. So you got, you know, the engineer of that offense on the field knows what he's doing. It's just kind of the rest of the team's got to get on the same page as him and get up to speed quickly. And last time I checked, you know, Kyle Trask, Kyle Pitts are getting all this Heisman buzz, but the defense played pretty poorly.
Yeah.
Now Ole Miss, you know, they certainly, we got to give them credit because I thought Kiffin and his players played really hard and they threw all the kitchen sink at the Gators. So I don't want to disrespect, you know, the effort they gave, but at the same time, if I'm Mike Bobo, I'm looking at this tape and saying, you know, I think we can have some success against this defense.
Absolutely. We can work with this.
All right. Well, let's kick it over to Muschamp, who he talked about getting more receivers involved in the game. They only had two receivers catch a pass against Tennessee. My God, he's already getting questions. Is Florida, are they the new LSU? On Colin Hill, what he brought last week. And then he also talks about Kyle Pitts, just the nightmare matchup he is.
Yeah, well, can you kind of describe the level of the sense of emphasis this week as far as getting more wideouts involved in the passing game? And I assume moving forward, you certainly don't want to see that many targets to Shy. I mean, did a great job, but certainly you're going to need a few other guys to get involved.
Yeah, we need some more guys to step up. But, you know, you got to win in man coverage in this league. We had some guys targeted, and other opportunities. You can't create separation. It's hard to throw it to you. So we're not just going to throw the ball to a guy that can't get open. I mean, at the end of the day, we got to look at some other guys. Luke Doty's going to have some opportunities, and if they can't win in man coverage, it's hard to throw it to you. And we're going to see man coverage Saturday. We're going to see it for the rest of the year in our league, and that's just part of it, especially in those deny the ball downs, third and six or less. That's what you're going to see, and you've got to win versus man coverage. So we're continuing to rep those guys. Well, I felt like we did some decent things in training camp and was disappointed outside of Xavier and Shy at that position. So we got to get better.
People said that Florida is probably this year's LSU team of last year. Have you seen any, after watching the film, any comparisons of that?
Well, I mean, again, I think they're very balanced in what they do. Dan's always going to have balance as far as the run and pass game is concerned. There are some very difficult matchups for you. You know, obviously Pitts is a matchup issue, how you're going to handle him, and they do a good job of moving around. Kadarius Toney's a matchup issue. Grimes is a big guy that's a physical receiver that can catch the 50-50 balls. So there's some skill issues that you've got to deal with schematically, and you've got a guy that can pull the trigger and make good decisions, which Kyle does that. That does create some issues for you. Obviously Saturday they were really good. They really played well, and we're looking forward to the opportunity.
After looking back at the film and even just watching Colin throughout the game, what impressed you most about his ability to command the offense the way in which he did? I mean, to go down 21-7 to see him lead the team back. Anything stand out in your mind in the way he just led the team and kept the offense calm and moving forward?
I think he's got a very calm, cool demeanor. I saw that in training camp. He's got an air of confidence about him as a player that I think you know, kind of permeates throughout our offense and our football team. I don't know that we ever had any panic at all at 21-7 that we were going to get back in the ball game and get some things going. I know Mike was very confident at halftime, you know, coming in at 14-7 and not a lot of good things happened for us after the first drive offensively. So was very confident we were going to be able to move the football. And I felt, you know, Colin certainly is an extension of Mike as far as those things are concerned.
How big of an advantage is it for a team when they've got a tight end like Pitts, a guy that big, that fast, that big of a of a mismatch so many times. How big of an advantage is that? And has Pitts kind of evolved into one of the better pass catching tight ends you've seen over your years in the SEC?
He is. He is. He's a very difficult guy to match up on. He's a threat in the middle of the field. He creates a lot of run pass issues depending on how you want to defend him. If you want to get in a bunch of man coverage, you're going to create some 50-50 balls for him, and they've got other guys that can win in one-on-one coverage. If you want to play a lot of zone, Trask is extremely accurate in zone coverage. He completes a very high percentage in zone coverage, and Pitts does a really good job of finding open spaces in zone. You got to be aware of where he is and understand where he is and make sure that you're capped on him in zone and in man situations with the right guy.
All right, Shane. So now here's the issue with trying to defend Florida, though. I mean, Pitts is obviously a huge issue, scored four touchdowns against Ole Miss. But if you limit him, now you got to worry about Tony. You got to worry about Grimes and Copeland. And they got some talented running backs. So, you know, that's the real secret there. It's not like it's just Pitts. He's getting so much attention. He deserves it. He had a hell of a game. But,
right,
you know, if you're Will Muschamp, what do you try to take away in this game? I guess you got to try to take away Kyle Pitts.
That's it, man. You know, you got to take out their best player and not like physically, but just, you know, make sure that this guy's shadowed and covered constantly. I mean, Muschamp's no dummy. He's a defensive-minded coach. I you know, you take their best athlete out, then you can't really say that because that's one thing about Florida, man. They've got a ton of athletes, and Coach just mentioned it. You know, Tony, the human joystick. You can't double up Pitts every time and just leave that little guy running around down underneath, because next thing you know, you're going to be watching the back of his jersey as he scampers to the end zone. So they're going to have their hands full, Mike. But I think this is if they want to run with Florida, I think they're going to have to do it on the opposite side of the ball. They're going to have to do it on offense. They're going to have to – one thing South Carolina did show last week is that they can be successful running. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, they lost their best running back for the year, and that sucks. But I saw a couple players step up last week that looked fantastic. They were able to move the chains, run that clock, you know. And as long as you can keep Florida Gators' defense or offense off the field – the less points that they're going to be able to put on the board, you know?
Mm-hmm. And if the game comes down to it, Muschamp, just give you some advice. Don't kick that field goal, baby. Go for it.
That's right, man.
All right, let's kick it all down to Gainesville, where Dan Mullen spoke on the struggles his defense had in the opener, on Kyle Pitts just being such a damn nightmare to match up with, on Kyle Trask getting so much attention nationally now that he's had his 6-touchdown performance. You know, that's another thing we haven't really talked about. How does he respond to, you know, all these accolades he's getting? And then on how he thinks South Carolina will try to defend his offense.
Yeah, Dan, you worry at all about your defensive guys losing a little bit of their confidence after that game, or do you think that they understand that it was the first game and there was all this stuff surrounding it?
No, I think there's a lot of teachable moments. I think we'll be a lot better defensively come Saturday. I think there's a lot you can see in what happened in that game and why we had some of our breakdowns. I don't want to take anything away from Ole Miss. I think, you know, obviously when we were down some players in game one, playing an extremely up-tempo offense, and they do a really good job of getting their playmakers the ball. You know, I mean, they got a couple guys that can do stuff with it, and they do a good job of scheming those guys to make sure they get the ball. But I expect a much better defense. You know, I think early in the season, everyone's like, okay, the defenses are great and the offenses are going to take a little time to catch up. You know, I think when you eliminate spring ball, okay, when you eliminate the amount of tackling that you've done in this time, you expand this long training camp with the limitations that we had in it, I think it's an advantage possibly really for the offense early. So I think that's what you're seeing. So I expect us to make a pretty big jump from week one to week two defensively with tackling, with the effort, with running to the football, with communication and making sure we're fitting everything properly. I think all of those things, now that we're kind of in a game mode, I expect us to be much better defensively this week.
Again, yeah, we all know you
Yeah, it was I don't know what created around it. We had it in there, but we know he's a mismatch out there on the field. So, you kind of as you go pull different things and you're looking at your players, what do you expect to do well? We looked at the tight end position, and we know we have some really good tight ends, not just him, but the other ones that we feel comfortable with in the offense. And so, it's a position when you have those guys that we want to try that we think are big advantageous matchups for us. We're going to try to use the part of the offense that's going to, highlight them maybe more than other years. And, that's something we certainly spend a lot of time with in the offseason is making sure, that we have enough ways that he's going to get the ball in his hands during the course of the game, trying to create matchup problems for the defense.
Dan, Kyle's handled everything thrown in his way, obviously, in the last couple of years. And you two, 6 touchdowns, people are done Heisman and all this. How do you make sure he keeps pushing? Obviously, he's going to, but keep building off that.
There's a lot of things he can get better at. We went through on the film. I don't know if he likes the attention and his name being on the ticker of ESPN and he likes that stuff, then keep doing what he's doing. If he doesn't, go out, throw 3 picks. They won't talk about him anymore. So I don't know. That's kind of my take on it. I think, he's a guy that's worked really hard to put himself in this position. He's been on the big stage. It's not too big for him. And I think he understands and respects the position he's in and doesn't take it for granted. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing. I don't think he's going to look and say, hey, I don't know. Maybe I don't know they'll have 6 touchdown passes every week. That'd be great if he does. But I think most importantly him is he's doing his job managing the game, making good decisions, putting us in the right plays, getting the ball out of his hands faster and being accurate. That's the stuff that he worries about. Just like before, he never came in and worried about being the starter. He wanted to be the starter, but he wasn't worried about it. He was worried about improving and getting better. And so now that he's the starter, I think I expect more of the same from him of just worried about improving and getting better. Well, they have some length out there. They have some long corners and some big safeties. So they're going to have probably some athletes that they can match up with them. They're big man because they like to play a lot of man coverage. So you're going to get those one-on-one matchups, and it's just about trying to create the best matchup we can. I think they got an very talented front. They have some veteran guys that are starters and then some really – bunch of 5-star guys that they've recruited over the last couple of years. So a very, very talented front as well. So, it'll be a big challenge. I mean, every time it's this game, each of the last 2 years has kind of come right down to the end. And so we got to be ready to go play for 4 quarters.
All right, Shane. So everything Dan Mullen had to say there, what kind of caught your attention the most?
The fact that, and I know I've been saying it, but it hasn't really registered, is how much better a lot of these SEC defenses are going to look week 2.
Mm-hmm.
They went through a whole offseason because you watched it in the NFL. A lot of these guys struggled week 1 on slowing down these offenses because they haven't been tackling people. They haven't been doing, So I think that we're going to see lower scoring games week 2. As high flying and great as the Gators offense looked last week, it could be skewed because it was week 1. So I think that was the biggest one that caught my eye. It wasn't just these teams in general. It was the entire SEC, I think, takes a step back next week because the Florida the defenses finally catch up to the offense a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you're saying there. For me, though, it goes back to Kyle Trask. And not that I think he's just going to become overcome with all the pressure or anything, but hey, now he's no longer the unknown.
Yeah.
He's no longer the underdog. He's shooting up these Heisman draft boards and everything. And I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see how he handles it. And again, not saying he won't be. Hell, I've been saying all offseason, he's the best quarterback in the SEC. He went out there and proved it week 1. But I think once Florida faces teams with a lot better defense, I'm looking at Georgia specifically, it's going to come down to how he manages that game more than anything, because I don't know if Florida can run on an elite defense. Not saying they can't, but it remains to be seen. So how does he shoulder the load here? And I think he's going to have to start showing me that this week against South Carolina on the road for the second week in a row here. I'm sorry, at home for the first time. All right, Shane, let's kick it on down to Baton Rouge. Last matchup here to preview, LSU and Vanderbilt.
Go Tigers.
LSU's won 8 in a row in the series, and of course they won last year. Somehow we got this matchup 2 years in a row thanks to the 10-game SEC schedule. But good news out of Baton Rouge, Derek Stingley back to practice already after being hospitalized, you know, Friday evening and all that went to that. And obviously they could have really used him against Mississippi State. And, you know, hopefully they don't need him too much against Vanderbilt, but I think he's going to see the field. I think they got to get him into the lineup and just, you know, at least get him some snaps here. But, we've been talking about pressure on Georgia and maybe a little bit on Kyle Trask, but all the pressure in the world right now has got to be on LSU because, man, if they drop this one, oh, my God, this is going to be a damn panic down here in Baton Rouge, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Somebody may get fired, Mike.
I'm looking at you, Bo.
Yes, right. Bo knows. And it's a little rental down there in Baton Rouge. So I think you're right, Mike. I think a lot of people are wanting to see how Coach O, you know, this is the first time he's had have battle adversity in a while. So he's no stranger to it. And, you know, you look at his track record, there's been a few times he's folded to it. So I'm just curious to see how this team bounces back. And, you know, I know Coach loves his team and he's a fiery guy. I know Bo Pelini's a fiery guy. I know a lot of people love him probably in that locker room. But I think it's going to, like I said yesterday, I think it's going to come down to the athletes that are actually in the locker room. It's going to come up to those upperclassmen. Who's the leaders on this team? Is it Stingley? You know, the fact he was out, that may have been something, but you know, when he comes back this week, is he going to be able to fire those troops up and show the conference that LSU does have one of the best defenses in the country? You know, they're young. They were out of sync. They were ill prepared. But I think they have a shot to get back this week. So, you know, that us against the world mentality, man, maybe that's this loss may have been exactly what they needed. So I expect the Tigers to fire out.
All right, well, let's kick it over to Coach O, who talks about, you know, the lack of adjustments last week. One bright spot, the former JUCO defensive lineman, Ali Gay. I mean, he was outstanding against Mississippi State. He talks about Bo Pelini responding to that tough week. And then, hell, he went his whole 30-minute presser. And the last question, the guy's like, well, hell, I got to ask a Vanderbilt one. I mean, they're completely overlooking the Commodore. So yep. Coach O talks up their defensive line a little bit here.
You mentioned about, on Saturday that maybe you guys would need to play more zone. I know you said Derek Stingley may be back here. I mean, after watching the tape, you know, what prevented some of those in-game adjustments there? And do you expect any changes against Vanderbilt there?
Yeah, all those are Bo's decisions. We talked about it. And, they were hitting us on some pick routes, some over routes. Some of it was scheme. Some of it, there's some kind of adjustments that we can do. Not necessarily play zone, but you can do some adjustments in man, passing guys off, not passing guys off. We may do that. We may do that. May not do that. It all depends. Having Derek not there really hurt us, obviously, but I'm glad that he's healthy. His safety is of foremost importance to us, so I'm glad that he's healthy and he's okay, number one. You know, Jay Ward was out for practice 2 weeks. We didn't even know he could play. He played a lot of snaps. I thought he did a fairly good job, but obviously was a little rusty there. So I think there's some combination of things. We're short on corners. Not having Derek hurt us. We had a game plan that we were going to play man and man him up, and we thought we could man up with the receivers. We should have made a couple of more adjustments during the game.
The pass rush, Ali Gay seemed to step in well in that regard. Did y'all, you liked his range, but did you anticipate that kind of performance from him in his first SEC game?
You know, we have seen it in practice, and Ali came and just started making improvement every day. And I remember during the COVID, he didn't go home at all. He stayed here and learned and studied and worked out on his own. And we just saw in camp, he just kept on coming and coming and coming. And I didn't know he was going to have that type of game. I thought he had an excellent game. He beat that tackle pretty good. He had a lot of pressures, some batted balls. He's tall. He played the run very well. I think he's going to have an excellent year for us.
Coach, you know, you mentioned on Saturday how, you know, after the game, the next couple of days are going to be pretty important for you guys in terms of leadership and trying to move on to the next game. I'm wondering if you can kind of take us inside those meetings yesterday and today and just kind of how the team is responding after, you know, your first loss was really in 2 years.
Yeah. You know, first of all, stick together, don't panic, and believe in each other. That number one. That comes from me. And we're not going to change anything drastic, but you know what? We got to tighten up on some stuff. We got to play with more energy. We got to play with more desire. We got to make plays. We got to coach better. All those things that slip up on you when you're winning, you know, hey, the championship's over, and this is a new season, a new team. We knew that, but now definitely we know that. Hopefully, our guys can start from day one today, focus at one game at a time at Vanderbilt. Here's my job: to get this team as well as we possibly can. And to play at the LSU standard performance. And obviously Saturday night was a big disappointment to me and everybody else, and I understand that.
Hey, Coach, Joe Garland on Fox 8 New Orleans. I gather you don't have to do much motivating to the kids this week. It seems like everybody is now doubting them, you know, talking about last year as a one-year kind of flash in the pan. What do you say to the kids when they come into practice today?
Yeah.
Because everybody now, you know, is saying LSU is going to be down this year. Their defense is not up to par now. What is that going to be like for you?
You know, block out the noise. You know, my Twitter machine's off. You know, I hate to say it, Garner, I don't get Fox 8 and Baton Rouge. I ain't watching you no more. Hey, I just got to focus in on the task at hand. Look, the game's over. The season last year is over. Whether they say 1 year, 1 to 1, that don't bother me. I don't care. This is about our football team. And you know what? It's kind of good to batten down the hatches a little bit, tighten it down, turn the Twitter machine off, and really focus in on beating Vanderbilt. And that's all we can do right now, and that's going to be the focus of our football team. The one thing I want our team to understand, now I told them in the locker room, when you win, I give you the credit. When we don't win, I take it. But it's my job to fix it. And I guarantee you this week, we're going to start fixing it.
You had to kind of bounce off that. It's your first post-game week with Bo Pelini, I guess. What has he been like these past 48 hours and with that coach?
It's been fantastic. He was the first guy to come see me in my dressing room. First guy. I said, Coach, I should have done a better job. And he was hurting just like everybody else. And we went over the film, and he saw the things that he did well, saw the things that we must and will improve. He's been fantastic today. He's eager. He's an outstanding coach. He's hurt just like everybody else.
If we could have heard you and Coach Pelini are both similar, your fiery nature, if we could have been a fly on the wall listening to him in the last few days, you know, in team meetings and coaches meetings, what's he been like compared to you? I'm sure y'all are similar.
Oh.
And Alec Gay, his ceiling, performed very well on Saturday. A lot of people thought he was raw when you signed him, but he looked outstanding on Saturday.
Yeah. You know, Bo gave great speeches on Friday night. He handles the defense. He's very emotional. You know, he's been a head coach. He knows how to talk to the football team. He had the guys motivated. He's been very, not apologetic, not humble, but just, hey, you know what? Hey, I could have done better, Coach. Very loyal. It's hurt, you know, hurt that he didn't do better, hurt that the defense didn't do better, just like we all are. But, you know, I told him, hey, put it on me. We're going to get it fixed. Now, Ali Gay. Like I said, Ali was wrong when he came here. I got to give Bill Bush credit. He recruited him just like he recruited Joe Burrow, and he believed that he could play. Bill Johnson went and watched him, and I think it was one of Bill's first days. It might have been like 20 degrees up there or 10 degrees. It was cold as heck, but Bill came back and said, Ali runs well, let's take him. And Ali just came and worked hard. I think he is going to be a high pick, first, second, third round pick. He's going to play in the NFL. He's got the size. Hopefully he stays for 2 years. Don't get too good.
Hey,
Hey, Coach, Bree Andrus from LSU Tiger TV. So you said that, you know, y'all have to create your own energy, especially with the loss of fans at the Vanderbilt game this week. Do you think this loss, having it be such a, you know, hurts his team, such a letdown after the great season we had last year, do you think this will kind of put a fire under this team to create their own energy to kind of build them up for this game coming up this weekend?
Hey, can I get you to talk to my team today? I love it. Nice job. It should. It puts a fire in me, I guarantee you that. And we're going to have a fire, and this is a big game for us. And we're going to take it one at a time. And we're going to play with some fire, we're going to play with some energy, and that energy was not there for some reason. For some reason or another, it wasn't there, and that's up to me to get that done. I'm going to have to take my mask off a little bit more to scream. I felt like I was a little muzzled in my mask there.
Hey, Coach, I guess I'll get in one Vanderbilt question to kind of close this thing off. I mean, I guess, you know, They took, you know, Texas A&M to pretty great lengths last, you know, on Saturday. I was just curious just what the early scouting report has been on them and just kind of how you guys are preparing for that game, because they really weren't on your schedule to prepare for.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Coach Mason is an excellent defensive guy. I've known him for a while. I used to study his stuff at Stanford. Kenichi Udizi, who coached the defensive line with me, who played defensive line, is now coaching their defensive line. And those guys are playing lights out. They're playing great technique. They're playing great defense. They have two of the best defensive linemen. One of the best linemen in the conference. They can rush the passer. So I think that's their strength.
All right, Shane. So Coach Hoke, you know, he keeps saying the right things here, but I'm kind of disturbed about what I'm hearing about Bo Pelini and just how great he is and how outstanding. I mean, I hope that's not what Coach O said behind closed doors. I hope he's ripping his shirt off and, you know, telling this guy to get with the program here, because they ain't getting it done.
Well, Mike, Bo came in my dressing room and told me he's sorry. You know, I forgave him because he's fantastic. No, let's stop it right here. Bo was terrible, man. This defense was terrible. And that week, you know, I know it's been a crazy offseason, but you know, you can't say that because Mississippi State went through the same thing. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, they went through a whole new coach, a whole new offense. I mean, there was a lot more adjusting going on than just the LSU Tigers here. So I blame the coaching staff here. They just weren't ready. I don't care how fired up his speech was on Friday. Them boys played like shit on Saturday. So, mm-hmm. That comes down to Coach O's shoulders. I get it. You know, I love him. We've touted him last year. He had a fantastic run, but this is 2020. This is a new season. This is a new squad. You got young, you got, amazing talent, man. Five-star talent all across the board, every position. You know, it's just making them play better as a team. And that's just something that the coaches didn't do week one. And I think they get right week two.
All right, jumping to the other side of this, let's go to Nashville real quick. Where
take it down.
Hey, good news, Shane. Vanderbilt's opening this bad boy up.
Yes,
they're letting fans into the stands. But they're doing, this is weird, they're doing senior students only, probably checking their GPA at the door. Whoever's got the highest GPA, you get to sit closest. That's how I imagine it going. But, you know, all jokes aside, we just completely, you know, I think the story overlooked here.
How many are they going to let in there?
I think it's pretty limited, but
okay.
I don't know the official number. All they said was the senior, so I thought that was kind of interesting. But, you know, the thing we may be overlooking here with Vanderbilt, we've already talked about Ken Seals and how impressed he looked the first week. But, you know, everyone's looking at it like, hell, Texas A&M, what the hell's wrong with them? No one is saying, well, hell, maybe Vanderbilt's made some real strides here. I mean, they brought back everybody on defense. I thought their running game looked pretty solid at times last week. I mean, I already mentioned Ken Seals. I got a lot of respect for Cam Johnson, the receiver. You know, maybe Coach Mason, he hired a coordinator from Appalachian State. He hired another coordinator from Louisiana Tech, who's been one of the best programs in that league for the last couple of years. So who knows? I mean, maybe Vanderbilt here is one of the most improved teams in the SEC. Is there any chance we're just, I mean, we'll kind of find out here on Saturday, but is there any chance we're just completely overlooking the progress they've made this offseason?
Well, I think I think clearly we were a little bit there because we didn't expect Texas A&M to be a fight at all, but it was. And that was a lot to do with how great both sides of the ball did with what they had to work with. Mm-hmm. And mainly at freshman at quarterback. I mean, Seals was fantastic. I'm telling you, he threw some balls that, we're just talking about how great Kyle Trask was. I don't know if he could have threw that one there on the sideline. So he had some great balls. Now he made a lot of freshman mistakes too. And, it ended up later costing him the game, but I think, like I said, this isn't a year you can sleep on any teams. You know, this isn't Murray State. This is Vanderbilt. It's got some talent on that roster now, and these boys know exactly what's expected of them because this is another year they've been in Mason's system. So, but on the opposite side of the ball, Mike, you know, this could also be a statement game for Coach O to say, "Hey, buddy, we're back on it." You know, so. I'd hate to be on the receiving end of the LSU Tigers this week. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, that is kind of dangerous. I was kind of thinking that in the back of my mind too. So Vanderbilt's got to get ready for what's coming. And Coach Mason talks about that having to face Derek Stingley and how he basically shuts down half the field when he's out there. On what he saw from LSU and that Mississippi State tape, kind of what stood out. And then, again, he's very complimentary of his quarterback, Ken Seals, here. So let's kick it over to Coach
Stingley. Stingley's one of the best corners in the country. Man, we saw him a year ago. He's talented. LSU's a talented football team, and they're well-coached. Coach Ogeron, is well-respected. I mean, I've known him for a long time and have the utmost respect for who they are and what they do. They'll have their team ready to play. I know he didn't play a week ago. And, that was a great loss for them because, he's a guy, man, who can guard, his side of the field. And he shows up in the return game when you talk about special teams. So he'll be back. The thing that we got to do is, focus on us. LSU is going to come in here and they're going to play their game. And we got to make sure, we play ours. So, it's about, again, it goes back to preparation, consistency, how hard we work and strain in practice and making sure, that our emphasis is on doing the things that we need to do in order to, have success, move the ball. And we're looking to, work towards scoring points because that's what this game's about.
Coach, when you look at the film from last week's game, LSU and Mississippi State, it's one of the strangest stat lines with Mississippi State 600 yards passing, 10 yards rushing. What can you take from that in preparation for what you guys do, if anything?
Well, I know this much about Coach Leach. I faced him enough when I was out at Stanford, and that's not a different stat, for him. I mean, when you look at his career, rushing yards, what they do is throw the football. They major in throwing the football. So I think LSU, probably, went into that game having some understanding of that, but really, had a chance to see it firsthand. And I think it's about in-game adjustments, how you adjust and what you do. And I thought, for them, I thought they played hard, they gave themselves a chance. It's like anything in first games, things happen. And so, looking at that, I looked at LSU. I thought their run game, started to show up, midway through the second quarter, and I thought they were, a little more balanced. But once they got behind, they had to throw the football probably a little more than they wanted to. So, with that, you look at an experienced quarterback, who's been in that system, even with a new coordinator. I mean, it's still the same system. I look at their receiving core. They've got one veteran, but they've got some experienced guys. Out there, they got an experienced running back. O-line is working the gel together. So when you look at it, I think it was just the first game. And the biggest improvement comes from game one to game two. LSU and Coach Ogeron will come in here ready to play. They'll be prepared. And what we've got to do is finish our preparation and make sure we line up and play football.
Derek, I thought some of Ken Seals' best throws were on the run or rollout. Is that a function of the offense, or is that just something that you guys knew that he could do through on the run?
Well, in watching Ken play the game, in high school. I mean, he threw from every platform that there was, you know, whether it was pocket movement, you know, playing from the pocket, you know, a little zone read action. Obviously, it's at the high school level, but what you saw on Saturday was what we saw of Ken coming out of high school, you know, extremely accurate, you know, on the move as well as in the pocket. I mean, and those were the things that have shown up, you know, throughout camp. And are there things that he still needs to improve on? Absolutely. But, you know, one of the prerequisites for being, you know, a good quarterback in this conference is that, man, you got to put the ball in catchable positions, man. You got to make sure, man, you give guys an opportunity to make plays on the ball. And, you know, he can do that. He can do it on the perimeter. He can do it from the pocket. And I think as he continues to play, he's only going to get better. You know what? I think his post-game press conference, you know, speech or talk, you know, man, spoke to it. You know, he wants to win. Okay, man, it's about improvement. I mean, there are no moral victories in this, you know, man, for him, and he knows and understands, you know, playing in this conference, man, there's a lot of expectations on the position. I think as he got back and he had a chance to watch the film, you know, man, he learned a lot from that first game. You know, things about, you know, situational ball, you know, and what we can do to make sure that we can maximize red zone opportunities. And that's a growth process. But I think it helps having a guy like Kyle Shermer, okay, and Quinshon Odom, you know, standing, you know, next to you, or being able to bounce some stuff off of, you know, in terms of, okay, Kyle, how did you handle this? Or, you know, Q, like, what did you see? I think those three guys, along with Coach Fitch, have done a terrific job of developing all our quarterbacks. And I think, you know, the confidence, you know, to grow, you know, comes from the idea, that he wants to compete and win.
All right, Chase. So, I mean, this, you know, we just talked about LSU having something to prove. This is a game where we just saw LSU secondary give up damn near 700 yards of passing. So Ken Seals got to be licking his chops, wondering what he can do. And, he, you know, he's certainly not going to throw for 623 like KJ Costello, but I don't know. I mean, this is a good opportunity, I think, for him to keep this momentum going here.
Yeah, I think, well, I don't think you could rule it out either. I think anybody that watched that game last week realized that, you know, you can throw on LSU.
Right.
And, if you know, coach wants to cut him loose, they can, because, like I said, he made some great passes last week, and he's definitely got the arm for it. So, but I don't think that's in Mason's wheelhouse. I think he likes to slow games down and keep them close, and you know, try to win with that defense. But we'll see, brother. But like, I'm worried about him because, like I said, I think the Tigers are going to be. They're going to be so damn mad that they want to break records, man. They had a record that's been around forever just break on them last week. I mean, I'm seeing these little SEC spoof videos come out and everything. You know what I'm saying? They're right. Making fun of the national champs last year. So, yeah, I mean, Coach O's freaking – he's running right now.
He's got the Twitter machine turned off.
Yeah, he's got the Twitter machine. He is running through Baton Rouge without a shirt. I don't care what time you're listening to this pod because he's still running. That's how angry he is. So he wants to whoop some ass, man. So yeah, I'm worried for Vanderbilt.
All right, Jay. Well, that's all I got on this episode. You got anything else before we hop off here?
Well, a lot of folks probably wondering where the big three is. And this show, we knew was going to be a little bit longer. So we pushed it off for tomorrow. So we'll have that. That's the big three. That's the NFL players. We had a great weekend. A lot of great SEC talent being played and showcased. Man, I'm telling you, it was fantastic. So we're going to do that tomorrow. But if you got yourselves an Apple product, iPhone, iPad, whatever eyes they got out there, if you can get on there and give us a 5-star rating on your Twitter machines, that help us out a whole lot. Remember, if you get a 5-star review in, if you'll just take a screenshot of it, send it to thatsecpodcast@gmail.com. Mike will send you a koozie of your choice, and that's the least we could do for the efforts you put in to help us out.
Absolutely. We got those mailing those out on a daily basis. People breaking this damn email account. I'm getting so many emails, so get those in while you can. Get yourself a koozie. We really do appreciate each and every one of y'all for going that extra step. We don't ask for much, but that is one thing we do ask for. So.
Absolutely.
All right,
I'm going to ask for another beer, man, because this one was not good. Just throwing that out there. Sorry. I know. I suck at it. I'm going to have to go back to the bullet, man. So, but that's all I got, Mike. I appreciate everybody hanging out with us. Man, soak it up. We're you know, 10% through the season, so we've still got some more football to go. But, man, these Saturdays are going to start going by quick here after a while.
Absolutely. This is the best time of year, so soak it in. Enjoy it while we got it. That's all I got, buddy. Thanks for joining me as always. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Catch you on the next one.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols.